Technorama episode 712 for May 10th, 2023. A quantum leap of faith? Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. Thank you. We appreciate you giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where it is still sunny. The days are getting longer here in the Northern Hemisphere, and we are enjoying it very, very much as we turn from spring to hot over here. Joining me, as always, is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I'm getting ready to travel.
Yes. Yes, there will be no Technorama next week. We will not be recording on the...
That's right.
What is it? This is the 14th. We'll be recording on the 14th. There won't be any show on the 17th. So, and I think we're going to take the following week off. 2 weeks, yeah. So a little bit of time off. You Patreon people get a budget break.
Right. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do on my side of things for our user conference that I'm going to, but... I don't believe I won't be getting it straightened out. I'll get it all done, but it's just a lot of work for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. I'm at that point where if it didn't get done by now, it's probably not going to get done. I mean, there's a few last minute things like, hey, get somebody's picture for the keynote deck. We just had a contest and we figured out our winners. So we have to put the winners on the deck and get the trophies printed and get those trophies to my house by Friday. So it's, there's some last minute stuff, but generally I love it when people come to you. Somebody came up last week and said, oh, hey, I've got an idea for a workshop. Can we do this at the conference? Like,
sure.
Next year. No. Thanks for thinking ahead. Yeah. We appreciate your enthusiasm.
Yeah. I got a lot of things like most of my works really work on my side, like importing some spreadsheets and organizing the data, getting it ready for schedules.
Oh, Craig. Like
so it's not that, it's not like, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'll get that stuff done. It's not a big deal. It's just a lot of work.
We were asking, we've got a series of hands-on labs, and we were asking the owners, is it done? Yep, it's all done. Works great. Did somebody else test it? No. Then how do you know it's done? So I took one of them. It's not done till I say it's done. I took one of them, and A, it felt way too long. There's no way this guy's going to get it done in 100 minutes.
Right.
B, There were typos all over the place. There were instructions that didn't line up with the images. Like, you aren't done, buddy. If you were to print this as a PDF, it would have been about 2 or 3 pages of notes going. And I wasn't writing a lot. It's like, hey, and most of them were minor. It's like, your indentation is off, which tells me you're hard coding your line numbering in Markdown. You don't have to if you do it right. Now, I will grant a lot of people clemency. They don't do this every day. So once a year, they have to re-remember how to do Markdown. Mm-hmm. So it's, but still, it's not that hard, people. It's not that hard. And we have lots of enablement and training material to help you. It means they're not trying.
Well, I'll tell you something else that's kind of frustrating a little bit, and is that people don't follow the instructions. I know you're probably going, oh boy, but what? You have to really understand how things are set up on my side for this. You know, we deliver training classes. I'm telling the listeners this. So we deliver training classes on my end. I try to keep everything, especially for something like this event, kind of tight. And there's certain things that only I can edit.
Yep.
And I've already created a lot of the skeleton for everybody to use. Well, one of the configuration packages just the other day, hey, our configuration package isn't on our template. I'm like, why not?
Because they made their own.
They made their own. I'm like, I sound like a jerk. I know, but when I reply back, I say, I asked everybody not to do that, but I have replaced it. I swapped it.
Craig, if you're seeing a pattern, it means it's an opportunity for improvement. Don't look at them and like, hey, you're not listening. You're not watching. It means I didn't tell you something.
I told them why. I said, because I try to keep like tight lid on this, because if everybody made their own, it'd be chaos. I wouldn't know, you know, you make a new record in the database. How am I supposed to know? You know, that's what I'm saying. So I try to keep a tight
lid. Dude, you didn't just ask that question seriously, did you?
You know what I'm talking about.
You did not say, how do I know? Because we have logic that'll say a new record was created. Go tell Craig. Okay. You can put that in there. That is a 5-minute operation.
No.
I'm calling you out on that statement.
I don't think you understand what I'm saying then.
You just said, if somebody creates a new record, how am I supposed to know? You make that rule.
I know, because what I'm saying is, I don't need to know every configuration image or configuration created. I need to know the ones that are specific for this conference. And if unless they put the words K23 or knowledge, how would I know?
Again, Craig, if you're seeing a pattern to this problem, there is a solution. We can fix this.
Oh, I know what the solution is.
Don't just keep complaining that people are doing this over and over again, because I've heard this broken record before. I'll give you some other feedback later about things that I've heard from people who use your system for opportunities for improvement. But I don't want to clog up our show with that. We are going into some feedback from our viewers first.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Ladders. We have some feedback for our question of the week from last week. What movie blew your mind the first time you saw it? And we have comment from John Kratzer, who says, The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951 version. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
That one did blow my mind, because I was younger when I saw that. Not in 1952 or anything, but... but when I saw it, you know, as a kid, I always thought that kind of scared me, you know, thinking that aliens came down and stopped the Earth from moving, that kind of thing. Thought it was pretty cool.
Lone Guys Night says, The Matrix. Yes. I would say that was a very good original storyline.
It was a nice surprise when I went to, it was one of those movies, you go, okay, it's a sci-fi movie and kind of get the idea a little bit from the trailers, but wow. Yeah, it kind of blew my mind when you saw it.
He says, also Jacob's Ladder, but not in a good way. All
righty. Right. Yeah. Steve London says, a few, let me go to click Seymour.
Seymour, right. He always has a Seymour on his. I love That's Steve. Right.
Steve London, a few good movies. The Green Book.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with that one. The Matrix. The first one, the fourth one blew my mind in a bad way.
That's more like blowing a fuse.
And the beach assault scene and Saving Private Ryan. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I was watching that with my dad, and he, you know, he's a Vietnam veteran, as Steve knows. But dad said dad didn't do that beach run, but he said that's the way war is, you know, the way it was portrayed. He said that one is one of my absolute best movie theater memories. Yes, I agree. All Alone in a 700 seated theater on a third row, and the sound cranked up to 11 on a 10 scale. Yes. The rest of the movie is great, but not that mind blowing. Yeah. Those war scenes were eye opening. I'll say that.
So I met the guy who, the guy who saved Private Ryan, the Tom Hanks character
Real guy.
I met him when my brother was installed as the chief of police in California. Elderly gentleman, still getting around. Paul goes,
I think you mentioned that one time. Okay. Yeah.
Saved Private Ryan. Like, oh, very cool.
Yeah. That is pretty cool. Did you go up to him and say, man, you don't look anything like Matt Damon?
You don't look anything like Tom Hanks. Matt Robinson says, Princess Bride. Only reason I went to see it was free tickets from a bookstore. Yeah. Didn't know what it was even that it was even a book. He also says Indiana Jones had a solid string of thrills and stunts that made the time fly. Dead Poets Society. It never felt like I never felt a chill in a theater until I watched the gun scene. Ooh.
Yeah, I did like that movie. Actually, the one scene that in that movie that really sticks out to me, not necessarily the gun scene, but when they stand up on their desk to get a different perspective of the world, I was like, that whole concept just really stuck in my mind. So routinely I stand up on my desk and look around my room. So, oh yeah, I need to clean it up.
Another vote for The Matrix from Stephen Weshey and Michelle Cook Lopez says The Sixth Sense blew my mind and The Matrix was amazing.
Now The Sixth Sense can only blow your mind once because it's a pretty big twist. And
yeah, it's like Citizen Kane, you know, once you know the secret.
Yeah. So that was the other good movie. Again, Brad Miller, the first Matrix movie, not the rest of the crappy ones. No.
It's like Highlander.
I would say the first Matrix was great. The rest of them were just a SFX kind of showcase. That's pretty much it.
Jack Mangan says Memento. Amy Bowen is, she says, in that same vein, Inception. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting, that was kind of Matrix-like too. It was like, it just kept you going like, wait, what? Wait, where does the reality start in the...
Oh, Inception?
Inception, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Gary Lindro says, what dreams may come?
I don't remember that one.
I don't either. I'm going to have to go look that up.
All right. So my friend Craig Watson, he said, back in the day, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And actually, I don't know about blowing my mind, but I sure did. I liked Silent Running. I liked that one a lot when I was a kid.
Sure.
Most recently, he said, 1917. He says he doesn't care. I don't care about cinematography generally, but that show made me a believer. It's a value and it's amazing. So I'm going to check out. I haven't watched 1917 yet, but it's supposed to be filmed like a one-off take where, you know, whether they follow him along, I'm not mistaken, for the whole movie.
Oh, where
they're trying to get some information to. What was that? I know it sounds stupid trying to describe something I don't understand. There you go. Yeah. During World War One, two British soldiers, Lance Corporal Schofield and Lance Corporal Blake, received seemingly impossible orders in a race against time. They must cross over enemy territory to deliver a message that could potentially save 1,600 of their fellow comrades.
I did see that movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, you did see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like they did the whole movie in one take. There was editing.
No, I thought it was designed like that, though.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Good movie. All right. That takes care of the feedback for now, but we will be back with another question at the end of the show. Something for you to think about. Another letter from our listener's day. And of course, we'll put it on social media.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll do that before we go on travel.
Oh, yeah, I'll have it done.
All right, let's do the history thing. On this day in history for May 10th, 2023, this is the 130th day of the year of the Gregorian calendar. There are only 235 days remaining in the year. It was on this date in 28 BC that a sunspot was observed by Han Dynasty astronomers during the reign of Emperor Chen of Han. One of the earliest dated sunspot observations in China.
That's pretty amazing.
That is
amazing. May 10th, 1497, Amerigo Vespucci allegedly left Cadiz for his first voyage to the New World.
You know who Amerigo Vespucci is, right? I'll take silence as a no. He is the cartographer for which America is named after. America.
I figured his name, yes.
It was on this date in 1503 that Christopher Columbus visited the Cayman Islands and named them Las Tortugas after the numerous tortugas that were there. That's why when you go to the Cayman Islands, you get the tortugas rum cakes everywhere.
I saw the Las Tortugas at the Renaissance Festival. Anyway, May 10th, 1869, the first transcontinental railroad linking the eastern and western United States was completed at Promontory Summit, Utah Territory, with a golden spike.
To the head.
I wonder if it's still there.
Probably, in a whole tourist shop and everything.
Yeah.
You're just cruising across country like, oh, we got to stop.
That's right.
The Centennial Exposition was opened in Philadelphia on this date in 1876.
And that same date in 1904, the Horch and... What?
Horch and Sir Motorwagenwerk.
Yeah, Motorwagenwerk AG was founded. It eventually became the Audi company.
Thank goodness.
Yeah,
what kind of car do you drive? Oh, Hörchenzirk Motorwagenwerk.
Yeah.
AG. Right. Krankenwagen. Okay.
AG.
Something else just went through my head, but I'm going to let it go. May 10th, 1916, sailing on a lifeboat. James Caird. Ernest Shackleton. Sailing on the lifeboat, James Caird. Ernest Shackleton arrived at South Georgia after a journey of 800 nautical miles from Elephant Island. Go read up on the Shackleton expedition. You'd be amazed. Oh, yeah. This is like throwing a rock 10 miles and trying to hit an ant. You know, it is really, really amazing that he got where he was going.
Yeah, no kidding. I do remember reading about it. It was on this date in 1946 that saw the first successful launch of the American V-2 rocket at White Sands Proving Ground.
Thank you, Wernher von Braun. Marvel Comics published the first issue of The Incredible Hulk on this date in 1962.
And look at the shirt I got.
Wow. Is that from 1962 also?
No.
Then read on.
It's from a long time ago, though. And it was 48 years ago today that Sony introduced the Betamax video cassette, which we use every day today. Wait, no.
Long-standing standard. Yep. The better standard that lost.
It lost the home market, but it was very, very widely used in the TV stations and videos.
One World Trade Center became the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere on this date in 2013. And happy birthday goes out to. Yes.
Go ahead.
American captain and explorer Robert Gray, born in the state in 1755. I'm sorry. I thought we got to the listener birthdays where I take over. Keep going.
Yeah. Born May 10th, 1788. French physicist and engineer Augustine Jean Fresnel.
Didn't we talk about Fresnel a little while ago when he invented the lighthouse thing?
I thought we brought him up. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if it's the same one or not.
Two birthdays? Wow.
No, I don't think it was a birthday. I think he invented something. Wilhelm Killing, the German mathematician and academic, was born on that same date in 1847.
And Fred Astaire, the American actor, singer, and dancer, was born 124 years ago today.
Fred upstairs?
I wonder what he thinks.
Cecilia Payne Gaposchkin, the English-American astronomer and astrophysicist, was born on the same date in 1900.
An Irish-English... crystallographer?
Crystallographer?
Yeah, crystallographer. What's that? And physicist. John Desmond Bernal was born 122 years ago today. He's younger than Fred Astaire.
By 2 years.
Yeah.
American physicist and engineer, Nobel Prize laureate George E. Smith was born on this date in 1930.
And also turning 63 today is Irish singer-songwriter, magician, not musician, and activist Bono.
In the name of love. Also born on that same date in 1969, same age as Craig, American author and blogger. Blogger? John Scalzi.
Actually, he's younger than I am.
A little bit. A few months. Listener birthdays this week include May 10th, Tim from Australia, and Weber. By the way, June 10th, AA was founded in 1935. Didn't have that one on my to-do list.
I know, right?
Yeah. Miss Eliza C. from Wingin' It 3D. Wow, there's a blast from the past. In fact, I'll be talking to Evo on Tuesday about some history of podcasting going on. She's on the 15th. Two birthdays on the 16th. Joe Edmison and Jason from The Angry Geek. Happy birthday to all of you. If it's your birthday this week, we wish you all the best. And if you're not, get your name on the calendar. We'll give you a shout at the appropriate time of the year because Craig's going to put the URL on the screen to show you where to go. And I'm going to tell you, that's the way it was on this day in history for May 10th, 2023. You can go to chuckchat.com/birthday. We'd love to give you a shout out. Happy birthday to all of you. Yes. Let's get on with some news. What do we have? This one.
Good news, crybabies.
Well, kind of, sort of. So what many people know, the connection between NASA and Star Trek is the Enterprise, right? Now, NASA didn't launch NCC-1701, but what they did do is name one of their first shuttles, the first shuttle after the Enterprise.
After a big letter writing campaign.
Yeah, from the fandom. But what you may not have known is back in the 90s, when they were still working on stealth technology. You know, you had the stealth fighter, you had the stealth bomber. One of the earlier designs for a stealth fighter had kind of a bent wing design. Mm-hmm. Now, more bent wing in the other direction than the old Corsair airplane. Those went down and then up as you went out from the fuselage.
This image looks like it looks like some kind of paper airplane.
It kind of does. I don't know if this is CG or a picture of it, but there is a stealth plane that was named the Bird of Prey after the Klingon Bird of Prey, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was.
It is in the National Museum of the United States Air Force. Well, that's on the website. And you can visit it in Dayton, Ohio, if you go to the National Museum of the United States Air Force. So anybody who's been to that museum, I thought it'd be in the Smithsonian, but not everything ends up in the Smithsonian.
No. No, the Smithsonian has a pretty cool collection in its own right. But yeah, I thought for sure it was going to say, and you can see it in the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum.
Nope.
But
It was developed by Boeing's Phantom Works division in the early 1990s. It's got a wingspan of 23 feet and is 47 feet long. So it's got a very long, narrow, it almost looked like somebody made a paper airplane and then folded it.
Yeah. It looks like one of mine, when you were younger, you start improvising a little bit with the,
right,
with the paper airplane, like bending the wings, trying something different. Yeah.
To see if it'll fly further, fly longer. Oh, paper airplane contests. Learned so much from those. All right. We also have another news story about go ahead.
Now, the reason I put this one in here, and this is about the moon that display we had the other night. They call it the full flower moon.
Right.
And the colors are quite different from it. And it looked much larger down towards the horizon.
But they always look. That's a visual thing that every time it's down, it's like, wow, look how big the moon looks. It's exactly the same size. And if you want to prove it to yourself, people, hold your thumb at arm's length and you'll be able to block out the moon on the horizon. And when it's like way up above you, it's weird, huh?
It is weird. Well, the other night, I was not aware of this. This is on I think it was Thursday night, actually. So,
sorry for the late story, people.
No, the reason I'm putting it in here is because we were out walking the dogs, and there's a school, well, my old school is not far from us, about 4 miles. And there's a big, huge field beside it. And we took the dogs out there because we can kind of turn them loose off the leash and let them do their own thing. And we turned around, and I looked down. Kim was like, check out that moon. I was like, what is up with the moon? And it was very yellow. Again, I know it was larger because it was towards the horizon, mm-hmm. but it was very unusual. And I didn't know anything about this story until afterwards. But I don't know if anybody else saw that moon display, but it was quite beautiful and bright and very yellowish.
Well, there was a penumbral.
Yes.
Lunar eclipse, but that was only visible in the Eastern Hemisphere. So by the time we saw it, it was done.
Yeah. But it just, the display of the moon, just, it looked very much unusual. And when I say it was illuminated, not just yellow itself, but it almost looked like it had a halo. And of course the clouds that were, the wispy clouds that were in front of it.
Yeah.
The whole thing was illuminated. It was really cool.
You can get a halo because there's ice crystals up there that'll reflect the light mm-hmm. in just the right way, and you get a halo around the moon. It's very unusual to get a rainbow around it, but it's like not that uncommon to get like a white ring around the moon.
No, it just looked like it had the edge of it was much even brighter than the rest of it.
But I did learn where they got really the cool name the flower moon from. So, you know, there's a lot of the full moons in a month have a certain name, like the harvest moon.
Yep.
Or the blue moon is when you have two full moons in a month. The Farmer's Almanac calls it the flower moon because it's been attributed to the Algonquin peoples, a fact that the website adds has been confirmed by Christina Ruddy of the Algonquin Way Culture Center in, forgive me if I mispronounce this, Pickwanigan, Ontario. In the Dakota tradition, a May's full moon has a similar floral name, the month of flowers, according to the travelogues, dating back to the 18th century. So there you go.
Yeah.
Learn all about, I never heard it called the flower moon before.
No, that was new to me too. Actually, I think the next morning I was just looking through the news and I went, wait, moon. And I went to the article and explained why we saw what we saw last night. And I went back and tried to take pictures of it. I didn't really get a good picture of it, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
A leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. That sounds like a whole bunch of obscenities were just said.
I know, right? Yeah.
I never thought of it that way before. Or the robot has brought me another drink. We'll see how that goes. No, thanks, it's RT. Time for the Hacks and Strange Stories. And the article from Gizmodo says, scientists may have found the best way to catcall a cat.
Really? Do tell.
Well,
because I got four of them. I'll test
they did
on.
Several experiments. I've been reading up and watching up on cats and how to interact with them. And I agree with this article. Basically, they said they did a whole bunch of studies with a whole bunch of cats that hung around, a cafe in Paris. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, all right, if you just look at a cat, will it come to you? If you look at a cat and hold out your hand, what's the result? If you look at a cat and hold out your hand and call the cat, you know, or if you make a noise, you know, some people go, some go, pss, 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 pss. Grant just does that one. This one they said is more like a puffing sound, which if you get too close to the sound of a snake, it's not going to work. If you go, it's going to run the other way. So they did these experiments and they found that the combination of eye contact with the cat, extending out your hand, which probably thinks, you have food in your hand for me? Mm-hmm. I'll come check that out. And making
my dogs respond to that too.
A gentle sound. But they also talked about tail wagging. Now, I didn't know about this because dogs wag their tail when they're happy. Mm-hmm. Cats wag their tail when they're nervous.
Yeah. Dogs can also wag their tails when they're agitated.
Yeah, but you can tell a faking dog when it sounds like bark, 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 and that tail is going like, yeah,
I've seen some dogs about to fight and they're wagging their tails. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, they're happy to fight. They're Klingon.
I don't know about, yeah, right. It's a good day to wag.
Sit, Worf. Well, we're crossing the streams with our other podcast now.
I'm not a merry dog.
Any comments about the cats?
Mine seem to ignore me no matter what I do. Actually, like your son-in-law making the sound. Mm-hmm. Whenever the cat's doing something I don't want it to do,
right?
And rather than me trying to get up out of my chair and go there, I'll make that psst sound, and they usually stop, and they'll stop and do what they're.
I think they've been trained to know what that sound means, because I try that on Todd, and it's like out of context. But if he's on the counter and I say "get down," he knows that tone of voice, and he will get down. He's like, sure. "Busted!" But if I said, "Hey, Todd, why don't you get down?" He's going to look at me like.
I do use that sound all the time. You know, psst, you know, if I and I can make it louder, and they'll respond. And you know what? I always think do that with the dogs too. When I'm walking them down the road, I usually walk just it's a few houses down. There's an empty lot. And I usually take them there in the morning. And as we're walking down there, if they're walking into the road or something like that, I can correct them. I can psst, and they'll get over. And I don't have to say, you know, say their name out loud or try and get loud outside.
It's your version of a clicker.
Psst. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
And you know, you can condition people this way too. We made an agreement, Donna and I made an agreement when the girls were little, that a threat countdown, a threat we would count down 3, 2, 1, but something fun was a count up, because a lot of times people were using the same numbering system for both things. Like, hey, jump to daddy, ready? 1, 2, 3. Okay. But if they're in trouble, they're going 1, 2, like, no, it's like, they gotta, it's like, what are you counting to? 3, 5? 117? I don't know. But if you say 3, 2, 1, they know there's a finite limit to that. So that was just something we did for our kids. And I think I may have told this story before. You can only do this once, people, but it's really, really fun to just mess with your kids. They were, you know, like 5 and 7 years old playing or sitting watching. They were watching TV in the living room.
I thought you were going to say 31.
And I was standing, I was standing at the top of the stairs, and all I did is three. And they looked at me like, what? We're being condemned for something.
Oh my gosh. You're like, cheese it.
Yeah. I swear it was broke when I got there.
Yeah.
They start yelling out confessions.
We didn't do anything. She did it.
Right.
That's funny. No, I didn't really, don't think Kim and I ever had that kind of conversation about counting up Chris's countdown. The only thing we tried to do, and I won't say that I did it every time. If you say you're going to do something, you better follow through with it with the kid. You know, if you say,
oh, how
that's the way this is. Or this,
yeah, I have
tried. I try, but I'm not perfect, but I tried.
I have coworkers much like that. I wish they had learned that lesson. Well, and if you can't get it done, you tell the other person you made the commitment to as soon as possible and see if you can renegotiate. You don't just let it go past the due date.
No, I'm talking about with my kid, not
right. No,
not I'm scheduling a meeting with him.
No, I'm saying I have coworkers. It's just a principle of life is called integrity. Yeah, and it's trust. Once you lose the trust, what does Bill McDermott say, Craig? Trust is the ultimate currency. It's earned in drops and lost in buckets.
That's right.
Okay. Words to
there's been a couple, I will admit, probably in the last month, there's been a couple of meetings I ended up missing, but I turned around and apologized to the people that, you know.
Well, you let them know. You say on Slack, hey, I can't make this meeting. So they know they're not waiting on you, I hope.
No, it was for some reason I didn't get a notification, and I was deep into coding. Now, you know how that is. You start coding, and you're kind of focused, and then next thing I know, I go, oh, it's 2:45.
They're called alarms.
Happened? And I go, what happened? No, my alarm didn't go off for it.
Now so he's got excuses. I'm just kidding.
No, my phone was probably muted or something. So I followed up and apologized to him. I didn't just ignore it.
I tell my calendar, you are the only thing allowed through besides text messages from the starred people in my contacts list. But calendar alarms must get through even though do not disturb is turned on.
I know. I do the same thing. I'm just saying, I think my appointment was set to no reminders for whatever reason.
One doesn't make a pattern.
No, it doesn't. But what I was getting at was I followed up, took responsibility for it, and I apologized for missing the meeting because I don't like missing a meeting if I say I'm going to be there.
Yep.
It's a waste of their time, you know?
Yep.
I don't need,
well, especially if you were supposed to present.
No, it wasn't like that. No, actually, to be honest with you, I don't think I've – this week I've got a meeting I got to present on, but I haven't had to do that in a long time. That's kind of funny.
All right. Shall we continue?
Yes, let's continue.
Quick shout out to the chat room. We do the show 8:30 Eastern time on Sunday nights, except for the next two. We'll be back at the end of May if you want to catch it up there. Join us live in the chat room. Mike Robison is out there. That's all I see right now. But if you're there, you can always chat with us live, Facebook or YouTube, both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Something we like to do. Just kind of hang out with some friends on a Sunday night or Monday morning if you're in Australia. That's doable, too.
I know Mike's busting our chops a little bit. 2 weeks? No.
Yeah.
About being off. But, hey, you know what? We're pretty consistent, so you can cut us a little slack.
Right. And we let you know when we're out. So let's get into the Remember When. Some stuff from way back when. This isn't really Remember When. This is more like a revival from Inverse.com. Yeah. Yeah. There is technology that could finally bring fusion energy to the grid. They're reviving some ideas that came out of the 50s and 60s. So it says scientists have been spending about 70 years trying to figure out fusion. I do not.
Vision?
Yeah, fission. My vision needs fission. Help, so I can't read fusion. And they had some designs back in the olden times. One was called, there was like this competing technologies. One is called the tokamak, which was developed in Russia and did a pretty good job, but it had some limitations. And the whole idea is to get fusion to work, you need to get your plasma stable and up to about, 100 million degrees. That's all it takes, really.
That's it? Okay, no problem.
But the problem with the tokamak is that it had a containment issue, because if your plasma gets out of control, it could damage the machine. And it was very, very difficult. So once upon a time, there was also a similar technology called a stellarator, which sounds like something Arnie Kunchpard made.
It sounded like an appliance you would buy back in the 50s.
Mr. Bell, I've got the stellarator all ready to go.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the stellarator is an interesting contraption. It was more, instead of the donut-shaped thing, it was like if you took a donut and beat on it a couple times with a hammer, it made more of a dented...
Like a Mobius strip.
Kind of Mobius, kind of roller coaster-ish as it went around and around. But it was better for magnetic containment. The problem was it took a lot of math to figure out exactly how to reinforce this magnetically. And up until like the 80s, they just couldn't do it. So in the 80s, you started seeing supercomputers like the Cray. They started working on that. And
Whopper.
They're actually reviving the Stellarator in a project called the Wendelstein 7-AS, or is it calling it the W7X for short.
Okay.
So the Wendelstein 7X. This isn't the answer to fusion. This is the answer to, hey, we can do a controlled plasma containment. They said the holy grail right now is about 30 minutes, because if you can sustain this thing for 30 minutes, and they've got it to, what was it, a few minutes right now, or 90 seconds or something. It was fairly short, but long enough to go, that's pretty darn impressive. If they can get the stability to 30 minutes, then they can say, well, basically, if you can go 30 minutes, you can go forever, right? Or for a day. They've got it to by 2018, they had it to 100 seconds. I'm just glancing over, getting some of my facts.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So let me show you a picture of what this thing looks like. Obviously, this is a CG representation. So let's share the screen over there. All right.
See? Oh yeah.
It almost looks like the water ride on one of the Royal Caribbean ships or something.
I know. It looks like something you want to get in and ride, yeah.
The jet-powered water ride. So that's intriguing that they said, this is like one step. They said, now, you can't really say this will get us to fusion in the next 5 years or 20 years. They said, Klinger and Paul say the timeline is pretty ambitious. Predicting exactly when fusion power plant might emerge, though, is likely a fool's errand. Many fusion fans will likely have heard the cliche saying that fusion is always 20 years away, kind of like the flying cars.
Right.
So I thought it was pretty interesting. We like to stay on top of some of the news, and fusion is a nice clean energy that we're looking forward to.
Yeah. I think it's going to be obviously a game changer, and they do too, because they're working on it so hard.
Yep. Next article, I did go through and read all of it, but I'm not going to read all of it to everybody here. It's about 10 chance meetings that changed the world. They go through and they say Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony.
Wow.
They originally started in like the middle 1800s as part of an abolitionist force. In fact, one of them was born into an abolitionist family and then became known for their suffrage movement. So right. I thought this was pretty cool. And one of them was even on the temperance movement, which is like the anti-alcoholic thing. So they were good, clean, upstanding Americans. And it was a chance meeting that they had on a street corner. The second one is F. Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald.
I love the Zelda games.
No.
Oh.
I love that song about the wreck of the F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Right.
By Gordon Lightfoot. They were actually at a social get-together when they met. So interesting stories if you want to hear more. Larry Page and Sergey Brin were in here.
Wait a minute, Gordon Lightfoot.
You're a little slow on that one.
No, I was sitting there going, I was thinking about it ever since you said it.
Gordon okay. Lightfoot saying the wreck of That's the right. Edmund Fitzgerald, if you're scratching your head.
Right.
No, okay. Larry Page and Sergey Brin, you know, the founders of Google.
That's right.
So Larry, I got to make sure I get this in the right order. Larry was doing his college tour, and the tour was being in 95. Sergey was a second year grad student who volunteered to be a tour guide for prospective students. And right. they didn't exactly hit it off right away. They didn't actually get along very well together. But when Larry's dissertation on the World Wide Web turned into a bigger project involving a prototype search engine,
mm-hmm.
The original name for Google was Backrub. There's a Trivial Pursuit question.
Glad the marketing department stepped in.
Well, he may not have agreed with him, but he did have respect for Sergey. So that was interesting. We've got other stories in here. Let me see. Frederick Douglass and William Lloyd Garrison. We've got mm-hmm. Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, whom if you
famous team up.
Right. But did you know who introduced them? Gentleman by the name of Bill Fernandez.
I was going to say, wasn't it Captain Crunch?
No.
Oh, I thought he did.
So Fernandez, Jobs was visiting Fernandez one day in 1971. As he took a walk around the block, Fernandez saw Wozniak. Wozniak lived about a block away from Fernandez. And Wozniak was out washing his car or something, and he introduced them. They got started. They went to the Homebrew Computer Club, and the rest is history. And as it turns out, Fernandez would be one of the company's first employees of Apple. John Lennon and Paul McCartney are in here. Henry Ford and Thomas Edison were in here. I thought that was an interesting one.
That is an interesting one.
And fans of British royalty, as we record this one day after King Charles was coronated, we have Wallace Simpson and Prince Edward. Now, fans of the Crown will know this, that Prince Edward became King Edward. He abdicated, and that led to the line of royals we have today. Oh, what a different world it would have been. The funny thing was, the person who introduced them was Lady Furness, who was Prince Edward VIII's mistress at the time. So she basically sabotaged her own relationship. She could have been queen, and it would have been a whole different world. And the 10th one is Sacagawea and Lewis and Clark. She had an interesting history of being bought and sold and traded. And as a result of that, she learned several languages, chief among them being she could speak the Hidatsa. She could speak Hidatsa tribe language. She could speak Shoshone. And she could speak French and I think some English too. So she was like multilingual and they went, that's who we need for this expedition.
Yeah. Actually, when I read that, before I read about all the languages that she knew, and I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty amazing that she was able to do that.
Yep. I agree. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. So 10 chance meetings that changed the world. And she was actually like 6 months pregnant when they met her. And they said, we're going to put this expedition on hold until we can get a hold of her. Now, I don't know if she left the baby with someone here, watch the put in daycare or if she must have taken the kid on the trip with her. But that's, you can't just like, hey, you gave birth yesterday. Let's go. They probably had to wait a little while after the child was born as well. Hopefully, I didn't read. Hopefully, the child was okay. Because you wouldn't want to take a mother in mourning if the.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
All right. One other quick one from the Remember When section, and we will move it along here. A 1956 commercial from Upworthy.com shows this refrigerator with some features you just don't find anymore.
I know. Actually made me want to go find an old fridge.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
No, you don't.
No, but a fine one with some of these features would be cool.
Or tell LG or Bosch or somebody to start putting these back in. It might have come down to like manufacturing costs. Because they're veggie the fruits and vegetables did not go in a drawer like many common refrigerators today. They were in sort of a panel in the door that could tilt and it tilt down like a like almost like a tray on the airplane. And you could pull it out.
Yeah, you could pull it out, and the tray was about one layer deep, so you could easily see what you had in there.
Had a clear window, right.
Yeah, and you take the tray out, and you just put it go over your counter. So if you bought new vegetables and stuff, you're washing them and you're putting them in there. You don't have to keep going back and forth to the fridge.
And it had a little bit of internal shelving so that you know your potatoes weren't squishing your tomatoes, which also acted as compartments when you laid this thing flat.
Yeah.
It also had roll-out shelving. So the shelves were on rollers and could extend out, which I think is kind of nice. I don't know about you, but a lot of things on my shelves just barely hit the shelf above it, so they'd always be tipping over. And
Well, I've got actually mine are I can pull out like that. What I do like more than having the shelves that come out, sometimes if I have a large item, one of the shelves I can push back under itself. So then that way there's an empty
area. Have one like that too. So you can store taller things, but not change your whole shelf configuration around.
Yeah.
That's where we keep like the 2 liter bottle of this and a half gallon of that. The other thing that they had in here was before the days of automatic ice making machines, you had to pour water into a tray. And back in the old days, there were a couple different ways you could do this. The early ones I had were a metal tray with this sort of lever mechanism in the middle. It was a two-piece thing. And when you pulled on this lever, it cranked these plates that divided up the ice cubes and basically cracked them open, and then you dumped that out. But that metal handle, you did not want to touch a freezing cold metal handle with your hand.
Okay? Right.
It would just be like a Christmas story where you stick your tongue to the ice pole.
Yeah, especially if your hand had any moisture on it, you'd be screwed.
Yeah. So later, we got plastic trays, which you could then twist. You know, you put them over the sink or whatever. Sometimes you had to run warm water on them to loosen them up. But if you twist it, the problem with the twisting the plastic would eventually...
Just
bang it. Yeah, the plastic eventually becomes brittle and breaks. We had in one of our refrigerators kind of a plastic box where the front was open, which held the ice cubes, much like today's ice makers do. If it's you know, making ice cubes by itself, it puts it in a hopper, and the hopper then goes into the dispenser through an auger mechanism. Well, imagine that without the auger or the hopper. It's just a box. Inside of the box, at the top, there was this sort of twisted rail mechanism. So as you pushed the plastic ice tray in, upside down, you push it in, it would sort of twist the plastic tray for you. So you didn't have to use your hands and get your hands on the ice cube and handle something cold. You just took this thing by the handle and almost like slamming a hard drive into a drive bay.
Yeah.
Shunk, right. And it would go twist, crack, and all the cubes would fall out. But again, after a while, the plastic trays become brittle and crack.
They do, especially when they've been frozen and they're thawing a little bit, or wash them out, you know, just.
And then you find them at estate sales today.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. Have you been to an estate sale lately?
No, I haven't been to one.
We have an elder community in Phoenix. There's quite a bit of older people here. And they'll have an estate sale when somebody passes away. Everything is so out of date, Craig.
I bet so. Like,
do you? And then it's either way out of date, or it's something so useless I wouldn't want it. Do you want this manual grass clipper? No.
It's called scissors.
It's grass scissors. And I live in Phoenix. There's no grass.
I saw grass once out there,
and it's rusty.
Yeah. No, I haven't really been to any estate sale. It's been a long time. I don't mind stopping at like a yard sale or something. You know,
it's like a yard sale, but everything is bad.
Yeah, I'm not really buying anything. I know some people that do.
How about this stereo hi-fi system with one speaker and an 8-track?
Yeah. I've had one of those too.
Yeah, I don't have one anymore, and there's a reason.
That's right.
I don't have any 8-tracks. Surprisingly enough, I don't have any 8-tracks. There's one media that you won't find in this house.
I don't see that. I don't really see 8-tracks. Not even you. I think it. One time I stopped in the Goodwill and they had a few sitting there, but it was like some orchestral band that I've never heard of.
Yeah,
you know,
the Goodwill or another thrift shop, you'll probably often find VCRs still.
Sure. Oh yeah.
DVDs or DVD players. Okay, let's do the patron thing next. We are done with the Remember When. All right. There's some patron music. These are the people that make this show possible. Thank you very much for your donations. We got our payment yesterday, or Friday, from Patreon. Thank you, everybody who contributed. The likes of Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman. I'm not trying to sing this at this time. Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris Martinez, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, thank you, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawen, Crazy Joe Adventures. All of these people are wonderful, wonderful, and we got a few more, like Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Brad Miller, thank you, Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, Steve Cody, Steve Therian, Steve Webb, Steve London, and Tim Cook. All you people... I love that. I'm going to end the song there.
Yes, right.
For as little as $1 a show, they get their name emblazoned on the episode where they continue to do that. We've got various thank you gifts throughout the year. A picture here, a postcard there. If you get up to the $5 level, you get the t-shirt level. So we've got different levels and whatnot. And they get everybody gets an extra episode of Craig and me kind of talking backstage about whatever's on our mind for the week. Sort of like if you were listening to the video version of this, you would have heard before we actually hit record on the audio podcast.
It's one of those things, you didn't ask for it, but when you got it, you knew you wanted it.
Or like Apple, you didn't know you needed it until we told you about it.
That's right.
Go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast.
Hey, by the way.
Yes.
By the way, let me turn the banner off. I want to.
Can I take a drink every time you say that?
Yeah, by the way. Listen, so this last week I posted an image kind of celebrating our 18th year because our 18 years of podcasting was on May
1st.
2nd.
First. You had it wrong online, but I wasn't going to correct you there. It was May 1st.
I did want to say, it didn't matter. Anyway, so. At beginning of May. So I just wanted to say, congratulations, Chuck. We made it. We've done so far. And it's been fun, you know, doing all these podcasts for such a long
time. Yes, it has.
And as I mentioned on the image, you know, I know I joke about this, but it's really true, is that if I didn't have any listeners, it'd just be another file sitting on the file server. But it's not. We have a lot of people that's been following. Stop that. We have a lot of people that's been listening to us for a long time. A lot of people are no longer with us. Sometimes some of their kids are still listening.
The crickets weren't a dig on you. It was like that's what you would hear if you didn't listen to our podcast.
Oh, okay. So anyway, I just want to say thank you to everybody that listens, whether you're a patron or not. I think it's a great thing, and we just do this for the fun of it. You know, can't believe we've done it for so long.
It's Mike Robinson informed us also on May 1st. Oops, that wasn't it. Gordon Lightfoot passed away. We did not plan on that. That was an unintentional.
I did know he passed away last week.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
Well, make the church bell chime till it rang 30 times now.
I was like, why are you sharing that?
I don't know. That was an interesting comment, Mike. I don't want to know where the newest rash is.
So anyway, again, anybody, past, present, listeners, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Hope you're still out there, still listening. And we will get to the rest.
And as I did mention in my post, it dawned on me, the other advantage that nobody talks about, I don't even think you brought it up in your Podcasting for Dummies book, is when you podcast for yourself, nobody is around to tell you to stop.
Nobody's around to tell you stink.
You can't get canceled.
No feedback. All right, that music means it's time for Passing Me the Remote, where we talk about some shows and books and whatnot that we're getting into. I've got a couple. I'm going to reorder these because I meant to do that earlier. The first one is a show on Netflix that I've been meaning to watch for a while. You know me, I like my musical documentaries. It's called Metallica, Some Kind of Monster.
Yeah.
This is actually a documentary that was made back in 2003, released in 2004. Kind of a behind the scenes look at what it took to make the Saint Angry album.
That sounds like it's almost in the Napster era.
It was right at the end of the Napster era. So Lars made some comments on that.
I'm sure he did.
James, 2 months into making this documentary, he went into rehab for almost a year. They were finishing up and MTV said, hey, we'd like to get you on this show and maybe debut your new bassist. And they said, oops, we forgot to look for a bassist. So they did that whole interview. And that's when Rob joined them, who has been on board. It's a two-parter. The first part is 2 hours long. And the second part, which you can skip, is kind of a recap of the first part.
Right.
With some additional footage from 2013 about another rock video movie thing they made called, what was it called? Jumping into whatever. They aged a lot in 10 years, and that was 10 years ago. I mean, Lars has got gray in his beard.
Yeah.
Kirk has gray in his hair. It's like, whoa. But yeah, they're still cool guys, and they're still rocking it, and they're still happy. They hired a psychologist or psychiatrist to sit in with them while they were making this because they were in a really tough spot.
Really? Okay.
What was the, not James. Their bassist of 14 years. So they had their original bassist, and he died in a car crash 2 years in, in 1983.
Yeah.
So they got another guy, and he'd been playing with them for 14 years, and then he decided, nope, I'm done. So he left. And now they're going through some tough times trying to scratch together another album. It was interesting. It got a little long in the tooth and a very touchy feely, which was kind of the charm of this whole thing. It's like, yeah, these are real people with real problems who don't express themselves very well in almost all cases. But they got through it, and now they're in a much better place. They're much happier. And the fruits of that effort back in 2001, 2002, 2003 are still paying dividends. Well, as far as 2013 goes, I have to assume that they're still going because they're still going.
You know, when you got a group of guys that you have to, one, when you travel, and you got to travel with them and play with them every day and see them every day and talk to them every day, I imagine it would cause some friction.
It was beyond that, though. It was the work. It's like up until then, Lars and Hatfield were doing a lot of the lyrics and, Kirk was doing his thing. And it was like they all had their specialties. And this was the first time they said, we need to work together. We need to brainstorm and then pick the best of the best. And, not everybody was in favor of this changing of the guard, but eventually they all came around to it and it worked out much better. Not all of them are comfortable in the spotlight, which is very ironic. But I thought it was intriguing. Again, it took a little bit of effort to get through some spots. But at the end, I went, that was enlightening. It's so old, it's in 4x3 format, kids.
Nice. All right.
What do you got?
Well, today I went with my wife to go see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So I wanted to go see it because I knew it's going to be a couple weeks before I'm able to even look at a theater or think about a theater. So I wanted to go see it. So I thought it was a really good follow-up to the first two.
Mm-hmm.
The first two are great. This one, something felt a little weird right at first, and I couldn't put my finger on it. But I realized that there's no setup really for anything because everything was already set up. They just had to start the movie, So from where they left off in the Volume 2 and after all the Avengers Endgame and all that stuff, here's where they're at, and the movie just started.
How old is Groot now?
Jeez, he's actually an adult now, so he finally grew up.
Is his voice back? I am Groot.
Yes, he has been talking like that. So I'm not going to give anything away because the movie did just come out, Friday. But I will say I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was great. There was a lot of good story about Rocket, around the team itself and where they ended up at towards the end of the movie. I thought it was really good. So, yeah, it's probably one of the better Marvel movies in a while since Endgame, just because I like the writing and how they set things up going forward. So in the movie, as they set it up as a telling story. So it was really good.
Good. I look forward to seeing it. I'll probably go with Grantis when we get back. All right, I got one more. This is a retro rewatch. Oh, I should patent that term. That's fun. Last time it was, Animal House. This time it's American Graffiti.
Yeah, I love that movie.
It's like Lucas's first major film. And yep. I'm going to say it has not held up well.
Well, it's one of those you have to watch with the time frame.
Well, yeah, exactly. The pacing of movies back then was much different too. It was kind of a slice of life thing. I honestly don't remember watching it the whole way through at any one point in my life. So this was kind of a fun way to absorb the whole thing. Going, okay, you've got the relationship between, Ron Howard and Cindy Williams, and he's going off to college, and they're having this fallout of the breakup. And then you got Richard Dreyfuss, who I just love seeing a young Richard Dreyfuss. This is just fun.
Yeah.
And his encounter with the Pharaohs, the gang. And the famous scene everybody remembers is where the axle gets pulled off the cop car as they're pulling out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wham! Yep. Harrison Ford is in there, of course, as the drag race king or the challenger or whatever it was. But it really, there wasn't much of a storyline. And just the constant footage of cars rolling down the street, cruising the strip, it's like, wow.
Yeah. I think you nailed it. There's nearly not a story, but it is a slice of life because it's at a turning point in all these people's lives when they left.
Yeah, it was set in the early 60s. Early 60s. They did mention President Kennedy.
And how they dealing with heading off to college.
People were already past heading off to college. What was his name?
Yeah, right.
John in the Yellow Deuce Coupe. He was kind of you don't want to end up like John, do you?
Right. That's what I'm getting at. It's like a slice of life. Which, it's funny, oddly enough, I saw the other day it's a Facebook group for people that graduated my class. Mm-hmm. And somebody posted a video. I graduated in 87, and this video was from 1987. Somebody had a video camera, had a microphone, and was getting little quips from people as they were driving out of the school parking lot mm-hmm. on the last day of school in 87. And it was funny because any of those people I saw were any of the people that I went to school with, it wasn't necessarily my class, but it was like, it could have been, the way that they looked and everything. And they're like, I'm getting out of here. Woohoo. And, driving and catching a wheel as they're leaving. It reminded me of American Graffiti a little bit because everybody's kind of not sure what they want to do, but they know what they got to do. They want to go to college. How are we going to handle this relationship and blah, 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 blah. So it reminded me of that a little bit.
I didn't have any of that drama. I
didn't either.
This was a fun movie to watch just from early career standpoint, early Harrison Ford, early Cindy Williams, early Ron Howard, early Richard Dreyfuss, and so on. It was fun from that standpoint, but it was a slog to get through.
Yeah.
All right. That takes us to the end. We don't have a Geek Library or Media Corner this time around, but we do have a question of the week for you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, we're talking about narrator voices. So, immediately cross off Morgan Freeman, James Earl Jones, and David Attenborough. Aside from those three, which living celebrity has the best narrator voice? Ooh.
I've got one.
What do you say?
Peter Coyote.
I was going to say that as well. He was on my list.
He does a lot of the National Geographic.
Well, he does a lot of Ken Burns stuff.
Yeah, the Ken Burns for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got a good voice, right, kind of thing.
Will Wheaton is up there as well. I like his narrator voice.
What about Benedict Cumberbatch? Have you heard the controversy about him?
Beavis and Butthead.
No. So Benedict Cumberbatch, he did some nature video, but when he was saying penguins, he would say it penguins.
Oh, like jaguars?
Yeah, exactly. So people were picking on him online for saying penguins.
Penguins? Is that like caramel?
Yeah, I was like, how hard is it to say penguins? I thought he would probably nail that one, but oh well.
Penguins, they're a tribe of Native Americans.
Yeah.
They're like the Algonquins. No, that's not even close. Algonquins. Yeah. Like we were talking about before with the flower moon. The penguins came up with the flower.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
The feather moon. All right. We are off track and running out of things to talk about. So clearly it's the end of the show. Let's roll that fine ending theme and tell you how to get a hold of us as Craig puts the banner up. You can call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email us, techdorama@chuckchat.com. We'll read it. If you want, we can even read it on the show. That'd be great. 707-530-CHAT, technorama@chuckchat.com. Easy to do. You can even text us. I think somebody tested that recently.
Yeah, please do.
So that's a fun way. You don't have to have, you know, a dime in your pocket. Oh, back to the 50s.
Or a quarter back in the 80s.
Until next time, be sure to tell a friend about Technorama. That's the best way to get podcast spread, believe it or not. Not advertising, not social media. Telling a friend, a real honest to goodness testimonial. Till next time, give us a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101. Thank you, everybody.